Welcome back. This is Up North News. It's Monday, August 22nd. I'm Pat Wrightlow. We, in our last hour, discussed comments made by Senator Ron Johnson, and you would think that would be it, but there, again, is this evergreen placeholder that says, what did Ron Johnson say this time? And as we were getting set for looking back at this weekend's headlines, we found one example that we talked about in the last hour where he said that his involvement in January 6th was only a few seconds, and he never really answered the question about what he thought of the fraudulent electoral vote ballots. So, you know, a few seconds still matters in the context of, you know, what all transpired on January 6th and what all did the plot entail. But Johnson wasn't done with that yet. He also made comments, and I believe this was also on Upfront Luke as well, where the question came up about how he would treat same-sex marriage and whether he would support the bill, because he has spoken in the past that he would be leaning toward supporting something Senator Tammy Baldwin has worked on, which is codifying same-sex marriage into law.
And something that the senator has pointed out, though, since he started walking back his initial comments, was he never said he supported it. He just said he saw no reason to oppose it. That was what his initial comments were. And now we have seen a little bit of walk back and some sound.
Oh, it's not just walking back. I mean, he is, you know, he's going backwards to the point where it might look like he's, you know, taking a knee and genuflecting, because he's working on what he says is an amendment to protect religious freedom. He says, before I would ever support that again, a bill to codify same-sex marriage, it's completely unnecessary. Let's listen to him talk about it.
To decide that on a state-by-state basis.
Senator Baldwin has been working to codify same-sex marriage after the Supreme Court ruling on Roe. I know she's had some discussion with you. She told us they're working on an amendment in terms of concerns over religious freedom. Where are you on this?
Well, that is the concern right there. Yeah. It's a very legitimate concern.
Does the amendment fix that? Or
I've got to see their amendment. We're working on an amendment as well. So, before I'd ever support that, again, it's completely unnecessary. You have to understand this. I mean, that bill is completely unnecessary. The decision on gay marriage will never be overturned. It's completely different than Roe v. Wade and the Dobbs decision. Now, this is where stare decisis would be decisive. I do not see the Supreme Court overturning that, because that would impact, you know, millions of people that have been, you know, acted on that. Roe v. Wade and the Dobbs decision was proactive. It was protecting life in the future. So again, this is just Democrats, you know, opening up a wound that had really healed. You know, I've always been supportive of civil unions, but the Supreme Court, you know, ruled on gay marriage, and it's okay, that's the decision, let's move on.
As we look at...
I'm sorry, that's laughable. I can prove it, because I just laughed. That genuinely made me laugh to hear him say, well, this has already been decided. It's stare decisis. Stare decisis, you know, the court has made its case that nothing can happen as a result of this. He actually said that. That was this weekend, long after, weeks and weeks after, this particular Supreme Court overturned a right women have had for half a century. And for him to then say, quote, the decision on gay marriage will never be overturned, is... It's funny, but it's so not funny that he might actually believe that.
I don't know if I'm at this point now where I don't know if the senator says things that he actually truly believes, or he just says the things that he thinks are going to get him through the media cycle, like a lot of other national Republicans at this point. Because in the face of the Dobbs decision, where Clarence Thomas clearly outlined this strategy for judicial activists in the right wing to go after other stare decisis decisions, is interesting for him to just be like, yeah, it's settled. We got to get over it, move on. And just imagine having somebody talk about your, not even just somebody, imagine having a U.S. senator talk about your rights that way. It's just, those concerns aren't valid. Just forget about it and move on.
It is just. And then I hope some of you caught in his comment the way that he basically threw women under the bus, in that he said, well, you know, this will never happen because, you know, overturning gay marriage would affect, you know, millions of people. I don't know. I think there's millions of women out there that would feel like they have been affected by the Dobbs decision. But Johnson seems to think that that's not important, what has happened to women. And again, we'll say with a straight face that, yeah, gay marriage would never be overturned, despite at least one U.S. Supreme Court justice already on record saying, let's get rid of that and a whole bunch of other things where, you know, due process was the basis, and they no longer believe that it applies. So those are parts one and two of what did Ron Johnson say this time. Part one was that his involvement in January 6th only lasted a few seconds. And part two, his comments on same-sex marriage. Now we get to part three. And apparently it happened in the middle of last week, but, you know, there aren't TV cameras following Ron Johnson everywhere. So sometimes these things come out, you know, a few days later. So weeks after saying on camera, or on a podcast rather, that Social Security and Medicare should come up every year for a vote, they should be in annual budget talks, you got a lot of blowback from that, but has decided to go a step further. He was in Rice Lake last Wednesday, it seems, and Ron Johnson said that Social Security, quote, was set up improperly, end of quote, and that the system's funds would be better off invested, and I'm not making this up, in the stock market. It seems to me that when Social Security was set up in 1935, there was something going on. I might have to consult a history textbook, but I believe we were in the middle of something called the Depression that came about in large part because of a crash of the stock market. And that as a result, we had an elderly population that had worked all their life and had nothing to show for it. And so an old age pension plan, now known as Social Security, was created in the Depression, set up as a pay-as-you-go program, financed through a payroll tax paid by both the workers and their employers. And then that trust fund is invested in U.S. Treasury securities, which are just a little bit more secure than the stock market. But Johnson says, quote, what I want to do is I want to actually look at the problem and try and start fixing it, said Johnson, according to a recording obtained by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He was responding to a series of questions from those in the meet and greet session. Johnson goes on, the first component of the problem and the first component of the solution is economic growth, which right now we're having negative growth, but right now it's all because of mandatory spending. We're whistling past the graveyard. Nobody's looking out for this. Medicare runs out, and then the Social Security Trust Fund runs out. No, as we explained on the show last week, it doesn't run out. It is a pay-as-you-go system, and as the baby boomers, you know, continue to retire and draw on those accounts, and there are fewer workers per retiree, the trust fund balance does come down, and there could be a point at which, instead of getting 100% of the Social Security benefits you were expecting, you may get less than 100%, 90, 80, perhaps as low as 76% of the benefit, but it's not zero. There would still be income coming to workers in their elderly years because of something that they paid into and was protected by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, not the whims of Wall Street. So we need to, again, correct the record whenever Ron Johnson and others bring it up that there's not an instance where the trust fund is running out. Second, you could improve the situation of the trust fund in several ways, and you could improve it today and you could improve it quickly. One of them would be removing or altering the cap on how much of your wages are subject to a payroll deduction. If you're making, what did we say the current number is last week? 147,000, I want to say.
I believe it's right around there.
Right now, if you make anything under that, which is many of you, if not most of you, all of your pay is subject to the Social Security payroll deduction. But if you make more than that, if you make $200,000 a year, $2 million a year, if you make something like $80 million a year, in the example we gave of Diane Hendricks, the Wisconsin billionaire who benefited from one of Ron Johnson's sweetheart tax deals, you pay a Social Security payroll tax on that first $147,000 or so, and then all of the rest of your income that year has no deduction on it for Social Security, none at all. Now, you can either make the case that all income should be subject to it because we all benefit from a healthy Social Security system, or you can just raise the cap and say, okay, let's take it to 200,000 or whatever the case may be. Or you could even index it the way that, you know, the income tax system used to be better indexed, that it's, you know, so much on your first $147,000 in salary. And then for the next segment of your higher salary, maybe you tax it even higher. Again, not all of your pay, but just that part that's in the stratosphere. Any of those things could help moving the cap. The second thing would be to simply have a tax system that is more fair. And as a result, government would be in a better position to ensure that the trust fund doesn't run out. Now, Johnson knows that he has been taking hits because of his comments about Social Security and Medicare. And he has said, quote, again, I never said I wanted to cut it or end it or put it on the chopping block, but you'll see ads saying that I want to put it on the chopping block. I want to cut it. I want to end it. No, I want to save it. I want to save Medicare. I want to save Social Security. Again, if I could, I would recue the laugh, the genuine laugh that I gave you over his earlier comments about gay marriage, because again, these comments are laughable. When you say you want Social Security and Medicare to come up for a vote in Congress every year as discretionary spending, that is the literal definition of putting it on the chopping block. And if that's where you want it, again, somebody who has been so quick to talk up the benefits of the private sector, leave us to the whims of Wall Street to determine whether Social Security and Medicare are properly invested and healthy or not. I mean, as that shameless apologist for privatizing such matters, you literally are, your actions speak louder than your words, but your earlier words speak louder than the words you're trying to use right now to backtrack. Let's take a break. We'll be back. You're up north.